ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Economics.
And joining us for a look at business and finance news is the ABC's Chief Business Reporter, Ian Verrider. Ian, good evening. Welcome back.
Good to be here, Phil. Good to see you again.
Yes, well, a couple of months ago, we were panicking because the Strait of Hormuz was closed and oil was well over $100 a barrel and things looked to be getting worse and the Prime Minister was trailing his coat around Southeast Asia looking for any tanker of fuel. And it all looked a bit grim. Things have, of course, stabilised a lot since then. And then along came the MOU, the Memorandum of Understanding. Of course, all things were bright and beautiful. Not anymore.
No.
So should we be concerned? Oil prices don't seem to have gone up that much since the news yesterday that essentially the Strait of Hormuz is closed and the war is kind of back on.
It is really odd, I've got to say, that oil prices haven't risen further. I mean, they are up around about 9% last night and, you know, a little more than that over the past few days. But no, oil prices are incredibly stable and it's almost as though everyone's, particularly, you know, energy traders are in this kind of mood of, look, it's all going to work out. You know, Donald Trump always makes, you know, all these grand statements and nothing ever happens out of them. He'll capitulate at some stage and we'll all get through this. But all the analysts that I talk to say that September is really crunch time because we've used much of the world's reserves, around about 400 million barrels over the course of the past few months, which have helped stabilise prices. And of course, since the MOU, the Memorandum of Understanding, was signed, we've seen around about 35 million barrels of oil come through the Strait of Hormuz. That, of course, is now shut. So
how much of the world's oil moves through the Strait?
It was 20%.
Yeah.
But Saudi Arabia has a pipeline that runs across the country. So there've been, and it was an emergency pipeline for, especially for this kind of episode.
Does that work?
It does. And what they've been doing is they've been moving around about half their oil production across the country to the Red Sea to get oil out that way. LNG, on the other hand, liquefied natural gas, no escape whatsoever there. There are no pipelines to get LNG out of the Gulf states. And of course, the Gulf provides around about 20% of the world's LNG as well. So that is all there. And if you look at the prices of LNG in Asia and across Europe, they are skyrocketing at the moment. So things are not looking good on the LNG front. Oil, though, is, you know, it's elevated and it's rising, but it's been remarkably stable ever since. Of course, the last few days we've seen all of these stories about Donald Trump now wanting to charge a fee for moving, for allowing oil to go through
completely
the Gulf and through the Straits.
Completely ludicrous, it's not, is
yeah,
it?
This is a really strange move on his part because all it does is it legitimises Iran's earlier claim that they had the right to charge a fee, which he
vociferously opposed.
At one stage, though, he did say maybe we should share the fee, but now he's going, well, we'll take a fee as well.
And it's also against international law for him to even propose such a fee.
Not only that, Iran wanted to charge $2 million per vessel going through the Straits, Donald Trump wants to charge 20% of the cargo. Now, an ordinary cargo ship, a medium size or I guess an average size ship going through the Gulf, that would equate to around about $32 million
per shipment.
Right? As opposed to the $2 million that Iran wanted.
This isn't going to happen. It's ridiculous.
But to even suggest that it should be a possibility, you know, instead of just, you know, being consistent, although I guess, you know, Donald Trump, consistency, not words that you'd normally use in the same sentence. But, you know, to suggest that you should be able to charge a fee when no one else should, well, I mean, it undermines the entire argument, doesn't
it? Australia's got plenty of gas. Does the crisis help Australia's gas fields?
It helps Australia's gas exporters because they'll be earning more on spot shipments. I mean, a lot of Australia's
earning a lot more, you'd think.
Yeah, a lot of Australia's shipments are tied to contracts, long-term contracts. Interestingly, if you look at what happened with the situation when Russia invaded Ukraine 5 years ago, we saw the price of domestic gas here absolutely skyrocket. Hmm. And that was one of the major factors behind our inflation blowout at that stage, because the increased price of gas flowed directly through to the price of electricity. And, of course, we all know that the price of electricity went absolutely ballistic at that stage and was a major driver of our inflation problem. This time around, it's not happening. Domestic gas prices are not surging to the same extent. They are a little bit elevated, but not anywhere near that. And primarily because on the East Coast, of course, we have now a prospect of a gas reservation policy. And that seems to have really curtailed, particularly the Santos-led consortium that has been the one that's been draining gas out of the domestic system. That's led them to basically pull back and not do that. So we have adequate supplies in the domestic market at the moment, and that seems to be holding prices in check.
Okay, but their export possibilities are... They will be making super profits on this.
They will, and you'd be up in arms if we were paying the super profits, which is what happened 5 years ago, and in the years after that.
Okay,
happening at the moment.
Okay, that's gas. Back to oil, though. 20% of the world's oil used to move through the Strait of Hormuz. Now it's effectively closed, and there's no. Not in the foreseeable future. It doesn't seem to be open.
And we don't have a lot of reserves left, global reserves left.
How much is can the Saudis manage to move via their alternative pipeline?
The Saudis can apparently move around about half,
okay,
which is a lot more than was originally anticipated. So it was initially thought that pipeline was actually not a great deal of capacity running through there. They've somehow managed to increase the capacity and move quite a bit out of there.
Although the world seems to have decided that there are alternative sources of supply, haven't they? Is everyone just fooling themselves?
At the moment, I think everyone's fooling themselves.
Right.
And there's another big problem that is, it's before everyone's eyes, but nobody's really put the two things together, and that is Russia.
Oh, yeah, what's happening in Russia?
Well, Russia, of course, is one of the world's biggest oil exporters.
It is.
And it's being absolutely pounded by Ukraine on its oil facilities. I think most of its refineries have now been hit. And, of course, when refineries get hit, you don't just repair them overnight. It takes a long time to repair them.
Mm.
And port facilities are also coming under attack as well. So what we've seen in Russia, if you only have to look at the nightly news, and you'll see that there's endless lines of cars lining up to try and buy petrol in Russian petrol stations, fist fights between people trying to secure fuel. And Russia has gone from the situation of being a major exporter of not just crude oil, but also refined products like petrol and diesel. It is now an importer of petrol and diesel.
Really?
Yeah, because their refineries have been hit so hard.
Where are they getting it from?
I'm not sure, to be perfectly honest, where they're getting it from. I'd imagine it would be somewhere in possibly...
Because they'd be under sanction, surely.
Yeah. It'd be somewhere in maybe India. I really don't know where they're getting it, but they're trying to import vast amounts of refined fuel at the moment. Now, Russia...
Why hasn't the price spiked, though, around the world? It doesn't seem to have.
Well, because I think all of these reserves that have been released, plus you had 35 million barrels coming out of the Gulf in pretty much a big hit. When the straits opened, that seems to have alleviated the situation a little bit there. But Russia's production is scheduled to be 60% below what it was last year, this year, and it'll be the lowest since 2005. So the lowest in more than 20 years. And of course, Russia now is aligned with OPEC, and is a major decision maker when it comes to production. And just a month ago, OPEC plus Russia decided to increase production to try and alleviate the pressures on the global market. So that is one thing that I think nobody is really taking into account at the moment. So, you'd have to think that at some stage we're going to get hit with another big supply crunch.
Yeah, in Australia, of course, people sort of not worried about it anymore. so much. No. Even though nothing fundamentally has changed here, I mean, the government's done seems to have done a good job in cadging whatever's around, and our domestic reserve is up a bit, but then again, our reserve is so hopelessly fragile anyway that you think, well, you know, why would we be okay? Well, we're not going to be okay. I was talking with one of our correspondents last night who said Iran has now got a big interest in the Strait not opening for a considerable period because they know that it will stuff up the US midterms.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because fuel prices, high gas prices in the States are going to be negative for Donald Trump.
And yeah, look, they're out to extract as much pain as possible. Mm. And I guess it's the difference between America and Iran in terms of what you've got to lose. I mean, Iran is in a situation where it figures it has basically nothing to lose here. It's just going to go all out. It's not going to be subjected to the kind of treatment that America and Israel have subjected them to. And so it is basically, it's got nothing to lose and it's going to get, whereas America, well, it's a long way from the action. There are people there who voted Donald Trump into power to keep gasoline prices low. And of course, they've now shot up quite dramatically. There are programs apparently being rolled out across America to ensure there's cheap fuel.
Mm.
Of course, that might only last for another couple of months until the midterms come up, the midterm elections. But, you know, bear in mind too that Australia did use, and Anthony Albanese, the Prime Minister, used that leverage that we have as a gas supplier, an LNG supplier, to countries in Northern Asia and Middle Asia particularly to say, hey, listen, if you want your gas supplies, we are in desperate need of liquid fuels such as petrol and diesel. So if you want your gas supplies, a certainty there at a decent price, you know, we can ensure that, but we need to get liquid fuels down here as well. So, you know, there was quite a bit of argy-bargy going on there in that regard. And they have, the government has done a good job in ensuring that we do have adequate supplies.
I hope it lasts, because as you say, we are not out of the woods.
We're not out of the woods, and in fact, things seem to be deteriorating quite rapidly. And of course, you know, the whole, I guess, urgency about signing that MOU was about the fact that September was looming as a real crunch point for fuels, crude oil and liquid fuels across the globe, and now that just seems to have been thrown into midair.
Bring on springtime. All right. Ian, good to talk.
Thanks, Phil.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife. Yeah.